Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Allison Park Leadership Podcast. My name is Dave.
And my name is Jeff. And of course, we're glad you're with us today. So Allison Park Church, I'm the lead pastor. Dave's the campus pastor at the north side. And we're glad you're with us today. Do we have any five-star reviews to look at today?
No reviews today. No new gratitudes. But gratitude to anybody who has been a faithful listener for a while. You know, maybe you're listening to this right after Thanksgiving. We're recording the day before. So we are very thankful for you in this season. So thanks for being a part of the show. We always appreciate your ideas that you suggest for us. And, you know, again, if you have the chance, maybe you have not had a chance to leave a five-star review on either Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Just if you want to take a quick second while you're with some family, you know, over the holidays.
Give us a shout out.
Give us a shout out. It'd be super helpful.
Appreciate it.
So, all right, let's get into it.
Yep. So what's our topic for today?
I don't know that we have a title yet. We'll figure that out after this is over.
I love titles. You want me to give me a thought?
Yeah, give me a title.
So how about we say content addiction, hurry sickness, and other things that destroy your soul.
Yeah, you love the triple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or we could just call it content addiction. Actually, this is a kind of a new term to me. I forget what conversation we were having, Dave, where this came up. And somebody, I think it was Josh, my son, Dave's brother, right, said, oh, they definitely have content addiction. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is that? Yeah. And they were like, you don't know what content addiction is?
So well, I think this I don't know if it's a term that's popularized yet, really.
Okay. We're providing our own little terminology spin on something that's out there.
So, I mean, like Forbes, I'm looking online right now. Forbes has, they talk about device and content addiction.
Okay.
So, that can be, you know, whether you're talking about computer, TV, phone, video games, it's sort of that idea. It's media, digital media addiction, sort of the idea.
Okay. So I was actually, I'm a lead team member for an organization called Church Multiplication Network, which is focused on church planting. And so I was teaching for 2 days a couple weeks ago in Dallas, Texas, about how to become a multi-site church. And the host pastor there was Brian Jarrett. We were at North Place Church in Dallas, which is a multi-site church. Brian is one of the great preachers I've ever heard, honestly, just an amazing communicator. And even though he's in Dallas, he's a Steelers fan.
Come on, somebody. Wow. There you go.
Anyway, Brian was challenging the pastors there. He said, I made up my mind to eliminate some things from my life, and it has benefited my soul. He said, I don't have social media on my phone. So he said, I took off Instagram and Facebook and everything. So he said, now for the first little bit, I would pick up my phone to get ready to look at something. And then I would think, why do I have this phone? Like there was nothing to actually see because all the things I would scroll through, I had eliminated off there. So he said, I recognized how many times in the day I picked up my phone to scroll through stuff that really had no priority or value in my life. Then the second thing he said is, I shut off the news. He said, I have sources to get the news in a non-nerve-wracking way. That's my word, not his. But he said, I still am up to date on what's happening in the world, but I'm not wasting time watching news broadcasts all the time. And so that sort of reinforced that. Now, I know that's true for you, Dave, right? You've eliminated a lot of apps, social media from your phone. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I deleleted all my social media.
Okay.
Altogether.
So you're not even on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. TikTok or...
Yeah, well, okay. I've never been on TikTok, but...
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
I think it's a little bit like I missed that wave with
yeah,
my...
Me too. Like,
yeah. Yeah, but no, I decided a couple of months ago to just... I almost never used Facebook ever. I mean, I hadn't used it in years. I used it a lot in the early 2010s when I was in college and in high school.
So you would be, for your age, unusual.
To delete all social media?
Oh, absolutely, right? Or is that now a trend?
No, I think it's unusual, but I think a lot of people are thinking about it. Like, I think it's like, ugh, like it's life-consuming and it's stupid and who even needs it? But then it's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it feels like there might be potential loss. I've talked to a lot of people that have thought about, like, oh, you know,
I miss it.
Yeah. Not even I miss it because they haven't deleted it, but I've thought about it like 8 times, but I'm thinking, like, I wouldn't be able to talk to my friends from afar. Mm-hmm. And
it is good for that. Like, okay, I am able to go to this conference in Dallas and I know what's sort of going on in some people's lives because I follow them on social media and I'm like, say, hey, I was that missions trip, or oh man, I saw you baptize people, or man, your grandkids are cute, you know, those kind of a thing.
Right.
That part of it probably is nice. And then, of course, being a voice in the world on social media, like I actually had somebody recently say to me, you guys should be, your podcast should be on TikTok. Is that possible for podcasts to be on TikTok? Or at least
probably
maybe like clips little snippets
be.
We do.
Yeah, the clips can be definitely.
So I have stuff on my phone, although after this episode and after hearing people like Brian and you talk about it, I don't know, I'm going to reevaluate that. Especially, so I think we're doing this episode at this particular time. So we're at the end of 2023. If you're listening to this, it's the day before Thanksgiving. This has been broadcast sometime after. So we're in December. Typically, you go into a brand new year and you try to establish some health in your life, right? So I think from a long-term perspective, a lot of people would go into a brand new year setting some New Year's resolutions, how I want things to be different in my life. I want to lose weight. I want to exercise. I want to read my Bible, all of that good stuff. I actually, in this coming year, my thought is to not emphasize resolutions, although typically we really don't, because I don't know that resolutions really work for anybody. Mm-hmm. I think what I'm interested in is establishing healthy rhythms.
Yeah, disciplines and habits.
Yeah. So what are the rhythms in my life that are out of whack, and where do I need to come back into alignment? And one of these rhythms to evaluate as we're getting ready to go into a brand new year is to evaluate, do I have a social media addiction? Do I have an addiction to my device, my phone? And do I have a content addiction? And does that overall contribute to this problem of hurry sickness or feeling cluttered and stressed all the time? And is there a better way to do life so that I live in a healthier way going into my future?
I think in my mind, I think you're maybe even underselling the problem a little bit.
Okay. Paint the picture. What is content addiction?
So any with any kind of like coping mechanism, this would be drug use. This could be, you know, alcoholism. This could be sexual activity. There's a lot of ways people cope with different things, right? Yeah, porn.
Overeating.
Uh-huh. Yep. There's a lot of things.
Nicotine.
Mm-hmm. All of these are mechanisms that often people get addicted to because they're used to cope with life. So,
Yeah. You
know, you get a hit of something. It doesn't have to be a drug. You just, you know, you start to feel upset. And so, you know, you eat a piece of chocolate cake, which I can relate to.
Yeah.
That's one of the rhythms in my life that I'm trying to readjust again.
So it's a way to provide comfort or distraction for yourself to make yourself temporarily feel better. So that you don't have to focus on nagging issues that are in your life.
And the reality is, there becomes a point with any of these types of addictive behaviors, with these coping mechanisms, where your life becomes totally unmanageable, so much so that it's obvious to everybody and you. It's so unhealthy. You know, you've been in jail because of your addiction.
Right.
But there's a level.
You're lying,
right.
You're ruining your relationships, your body's unhealthy, you're in and out of the hospital. Yeah, it can get really extreme.
There's a level of extreme consequences, but there's also a level before that, which I think is where maybe a lot of people, including myself, have lived, which is addicted but unaware of an addiction.
Okay.
And why that is, why I think it's more destructive than the way you painted it, is I think that what we tend to do, especially when it comes to things like content addiction, and I'm talking about phone, computer, TV, video games primarily, is that we can numb ourselves and dull ourselves out from life so much that it causes major mental health challenges, that it causes us to not hear the voice of God very clearly, that it causes our relationships to be duller, that it dims our outlook on life and how good life is. And it also tends to do something where if every time, whether we are aware of it or not, when we start to feel a lot of pressure or we start to feel anger or sadness, any kind of extreme unpleasant emotion, when we have something that we tend to go just to like, I just need to veg. I just need to like take my mind out of the game for a little bit. It becomes the only real response that we have to deal with tough emotions. So
yeah. Wow. So that's intense. And what you're saying is, a lot of people right now in our world are content addicted.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So
absolutely
I don't know if it was you or Josh when we were having this conversation said, this happened to me early in ministry. I was in over my head. I was learning a new skill. I felt like I was letting people down. Rather than figuring out why I was feeling all those things, I would come home And then I would just video game for 6 hours.
Mm. Yeah, Josh was saying that.
Okay, and I ended up in the, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and then I'd get up the next morning and I was exhausted, and I would go back into it, and I was faced with the same fears and insecurities. And again, rather than dealing with those, I would end up just, distracting myself with entertainments.
Right.
Specifically, I think gaming, which is that like a big part of content addiction? Or
yeah, I often it is.
Social media can be too, if you're on it for hours. Yeah, right?
Let's even broaden it. Probably for younger generations, maybe older too, I don't know. But I would say at least for younger generations, your phone is probably the biggest risk of addiction.
Okay.
I have stats that I can pull up here in a second. I haven't filtered them through yet, so yeah. I won't read them yet until I have better stats, like a better grasp on these. But, everybody's a smartphone, basically. The percentage of people in America that don't have a smartphone is low. Like, most people have a smartphone,
yeah,
regardless of your economic
not
status.
Not just in America. It's everywhere.
You're right.
I don't. There's no place in the world I've been where people don't have smartphones or smart devices now.
Mm-hmm. And smartphones have been specifically designed, along with social media, to trigger a dopamine hit every time that you look at something. There's always a way to grab your attention.
What is that? What is a dopamine hit?
It releases a chemical into your brain that feels like stimulating and makes you feel good. Likes on any kind of social media, likes on a post, messages that you get, notifications all stimulate dopamine, which is a way of feeling good that is a subtle a form of addiction. It's actually been designed like that.
So you have a bodily hormonal
reaction.
Yeah.
And to your phone.
System becomes addicted to the next jolt of dopamine in your system. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I get a like. And if you respond to that, you get not a high, but what would you call that?
It's a very small high. Yeah.
It's a small high.
It's like, okay, it boosts your mood for a second.
Yeah.
And in fact, I don't know the stats on this, but most Americans, the first thing they do when they wake up is they reach for their phone. We're so trained. I think most people touch their phone hundreds of times a day, hundreds of times a day, which is crazy.
I feel a little bit like now, because you're describing me. I don't see myself as having content addiction, but I almost feel like I don't have a problem with alcohol. why would you even say that, right? So maybe like me, you're listening to this and you're like, I don't even want to think about this because, so I scroll through social media. I reach for my phone. I have a lot of things on here, like the Bible,
right?
For instance,
sure. Yeah, I mean, I use the Bible on it too. And this is not to paint all devices.
Isn't it though? When you start to hit on something that's close to home, you feel this need to justify, right?
Yeah, I give to God from my phone. Yeah,
I do. It's right.
Yeah. No, but
I have worship music on here.
Yeah, I would say a lot of the reason why I use my phone is actually really good, healthy, edifying.
Sure,
it's a tool ultimately.
But they do say even like productivity. So they say that the most productive people don't check their email except twice a day.
Sure.
Whereas a lot of times that's what I'm doing. I'm like, anybody text me, anybody reach out to me on email. By the way, this is also a generational thing. Dave and I are in a fantasy football league, and there was a big dispute on our fantasy football league that went back and forth on a text message chain.
Yeah.
I looked down at my phone and I had 120 text notifications. And I was like, who was assassinated? What's going on in the world? And they're
just
debating
fantasy
football.
Just fantasy football.
I'm sure that for me, an old guy, it's probably much worse for people who know how to use the technology well, because I'm still feeling my way. So mm-hmm. if you're really into the apps on your phone and how they function, probably it grabs you even more, right?
Yeah. Let me give context just for a second then, just so we know where this is going. This is not to say like nobody should have a smartphone.
Yeah.
It's not to say that nobody should have social media. But it is to say, and even beyond social media, that nobody should watch YouTube or play video games. It's not that any of those things should not happen, but
they're not soul neutral. They have the potential of having a really negative effect on your life, and so you can't look at them as if no big deal, because it isn't that it is a big deal in and of itself, like the actual function of social media or an enjoyable time playing video games or watching Netflix, binging through a show. Not all of that's bad,
right?
but can be bad.
It can be addictive before you realize you're addicted. Okay. I would even more. Okay.
So why now we're not talking sin, right?
No, right.
We're talking
sneaky patterns of control over your life and, you know, deficiencies that you actually might have in order to cope with things because of media addiction you might have. Yeah. So, yeah. So, you know, the University of Michigan says that an estimated 210 million people worldwide suffer from an addiction to social media and the internet. So that's, and then they say about 10% of Americans are addicted to social media compared to an average person. So that, like, that probably feels a little low. I guess
I would think it's low.
They think so. Addiction, the way they're talking about it, might be like compulsive.
Yeah.
It controls my life.
Okay.
I'm suffering negative.
So
setbacks.
What's a level? If 10% are like compulsively driven by this addiction, what's the level above that or below that or however you would describe it? It's not quite that level of addiction, but it is.
So there's no way. I mean, I'm just speculating, but if I could speculate, I would guess most people that have access to digital media, if they have not done a thorough search, are probably coping to some degree using digital media. I would say, especially in the younger generations.
So coping's too soft.
Yeah. Okay.
What is this? What is, if it's not a full blown addiction, what is it? It's sort of, it is a life controlling, life diminishing habit, right?
Yeah.
So it's a habit that is contributing to you feeling anxious, depressed, malaise.
Can we specify what I mean by this habit, though?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm asking for. Yeah, help us. What is it?
The habit is...
Because some people are like, I'm not addicted. But the real question isn't, are you addicted, like compulsively addicted, need to get checked into rehab addicted?
No, not at all.
So what is the problem if we're going to put a description on it?
The habit that we're describing is... when you feel, so I'll just describe different scenarios. You come home from a horrible day at work and you just feel mentally fatigued. The first thing you do is start scrolling. They call it doom scrolling, where you're just like,
okay,
you know what I mean? You're upset and you're on your phone and you're just like in a black hole before you know it, 3 hours have gone by where you're just scrolling through YouTube shorts, looking at nothing. And you're okay. Like, oh,
It's especially the time not to post something if you're actually, what did you call it again?
Doom scrolling?
Doom posting. Because a lot of people do doom posting.
I guess that's true. Others, you know, you get in a fight with your spouse. You have a run-in with in-laws and there's family tension. Somebody's sick or there's financial stressors or whatever. And so it's like you think about it, and you start feeling frustrated or anxious or upset or depressed. And so what you do is like, I just can't deal with this right now.
Yeah.
And so,
well, and then a lot of the content is also inflammatory. They're politically inflammatory. They are posting images that make you want to react to whatever you're happening to be seeing. So there's point of view, inflammatory, perspectives that maybe not political. There's just points of view. And then you end up upset about stuff with your spouse and family, but then you're upset about stuff in the world on top of it. And you've just spent all this time stirring up. It's like you fomented all this anxiety and frustration in your soul.
And
how about this word?
Yeah.
Content dependent.
Yeah.
Maybe not addicted, but you've become content dependent, where it's becoming become a soul sucking, life sucking activity that is not a full-blown addiction.
Yeah.
But honestly, I guess the way you would test it is to say, I'm going to take a week and not
do anything.
And then you would know.
No TV, no internet except for your work.
Yeah.
You know,
so
no
that's
video
what
games.
People say. I could quit if I wanted to. Say, well, then go ahead. Why don't you take a week away from it? Don't use social media for a week. Don't play any video games for a week. Don't Netflix binge for a week. Find other activities to do. And then ask yourself the question, has this been a healthy contributor to my soul, or has it been a diminishing contributor to my soul?
Yeah, it's because I think anybody can moderate, but going cold turkey, I'm not going to touch any of this at all. Feels it's just a different level. So like the habit that I just can I crystallize this for a second. We can talk about this and discuss it. I think why we wanted to do this episode, because we were having a discussion about this, it's really possible that many of us are sort of avoiding the hardest things in life by running away. You could call it escapism if you want to.
Escapism, yeah.
You know, we're running away to numb ourselves out, to not have to deal with emotions. It's not that we're not actually, you know, still in a situation, but rather than thinking about it or doing anything productive to fix it, or having to sit there and feel our feelings, instead of feeling them, we'd rather just numb them with a bunch of different type of dependence or addictive behaviors.
Yeah.
Often revolving around content. I know people that probably...
Well, porn is especially one of these vicious black holes you can enter. So it's not just your online looking through funny videos of dog tricks, right? Now all of a sudden you have been, you know, roped into images, and you're searching for the next and searching for the next and searching for the next. And it's stronger dopamine hits, right, that you're experiencing. And now you've really sucked yourself into something that's sinful and addictive.
Right.
I think some people would have similar problems with the addiction to shopping. Like, some people spend money on the internet because it also provides that hit of buying something you want. Like, you shop and shop is up, and then you buy, and you put yourself in a financial hole because that is a way of coping with some things. So there's probably levels of intensity depending upon what you're engaged with online. But either way, we have to admit that this is very real. It's a very real, you know, and we are living at a time where there is a mental health crisis everywhere. And we have to admit that maybe part of the contributing factor to this is not just a stressful world. It's these kind of rhythms that are a part of our life, which are making our mental health way worse.
No doubt.
So you content addict, and then you go to a counselor to process your emotions.
Yeah, right.
But if you don't ever establish a healthier pattern of life, you're in a vicious cycle where you're never going to get out of these emotional problems that are there. Because you're not processing them healthily.
You go to a counselor because you're having mental health issues, but then every time you're feeling something intense, you need a high from some sort of something. Right. There's different ways to get high. And so we're actually not helping our health because we're avoiding it until we talk to a therapist.
Yeah.
And then the therapist gives us steps, but it just is a slow process. And often it becomes just a state of being.
Like, one step forward, two steps back.
So let me describe.
Defeating your own momentum.
Yeah, let me describe for myself, like, where I've been at points. So I've realized, you know, working as a pastor is sometimes a high stress job. More for you than for me, for sure. You've dealt with way more than I've had.
No, but I mean, so what we do in ministry, and I know we have a lot of people in ministry who listen to this, so maybe you'll appreciate just hearing why your life is so stressed out. I mean, you can go from preaching a message where you pour your heart, you've prepared for, let's say, 10 to 20 hours, you just preached it, you didn't think it went so well, you leave feeling a little bit emotionally and physically depleted, then you maybe have someone in your own personal life that you're struggling with something at home, and you've had a little conflict, and then someone in your congregation dies, and you grieve yourself. You've got to be present maybe with someone at the hospital, and they've just died, and you're standing there with a grieving family, and you got to deal with that funeral, and then you stop in to realize that the income in your church wasn't what you thought it would be, and so now you got to have some kind of budget cut, and you're feeling like, how am I going to cut this, because I got this big outreach plan down the road, and you know, then you show up at an event and not every volunteer comes, and so now you're scrambling around and physically exhausted. You get home and your wife says, I thought you were going to be home a lot earlier. I was planning on that. And so it's a constant moving activity thing, and then it's also very spiritual, where you're trying to help people take steps with God, or you're praying them through on things. So it's exhausting. I love it. I love being in ministry. I'm not in any way complaining, but I am saying that from a soul health perspective, we do need extra measures of making sure that we're doing the right things in our spare time, because you can't afford to dig yourself another hole.
Yeah.
There's enough things pulling out of you. If you keep digging yourself another hole through content addiction, how are you ever going to make it?
So let's get back into my story, because this is where I was going to go. So that's a good description. Honestly, like, I would say most of the things you said I have experienced in the last like 3 months. Like, okay, some of them, probably half of them in the last 2 weeks. Yeah. Like, I was like, oh, when you were first going through all those lists, I was like, that literally just happened to me. Like, a lot of that stuff, somebody dying and all this different, you know what I mean? And anyway, So for me, what I, even if it wasn't just all that stuff, I think anybody in a high stress job can relate. The pressure that I was feeling to perform and to do a good job and be respected and grow my ministry and stuff, I think over, because I've been doing this for a little more than 10 years, I guess now. So like there's been times when the pressure's just been really intense and there's other family stuff happening. And it has been like the only thing I want to do when I get home is just stop thinking about work or stop thinking about what I'm dealing with. And so, you know, maybe I'd be with my wife and then we would watch TV or she'd do something else. I'm watching TV or I'm playing video games or I'm reading literally 20 Steelers and Chelsea news articles, which I'm still, that's one thing I was thinking, I might need to delete this because I probably read 25 articles.
It helps when they're winning.
Yeah. And they're both just doing okay.
Yeah.
So, but for me, so I found myself I was really dumping myself into hours and hours where I, you know, it was like, I'm doing something enjoyable. I'm doing something somewhat fun, but like, before I know it, like, how do I say it? Like the whole night's gone, you know, mm-hmm. and I really haven't dealt
then
with it.
Then you're like, I don't even want to go to bed because I have to get up tomorrow.
Yes. Oh my, no, but seriously, like you're joking about that. But then I'm like, oh, I can't believe the night's already at this point.
So I'm just going to stay up and play video games till 3. And then,
yeah, I don't.
Now you're tired
and then
you're
exhausted.
Late.
Yeah, and you wake up the next morning and then you're dreading it. And it's like, oh my goodness.
That
and
is all this, no way to live.
And I've lived there for, I mean, yeah. not that recently, but in the last few years, I've been sure. there. I've had seasons like that. So like this is, okay, so personal steps that I've recently taken because I felt like God has asked me to. One of the things that I did was, and this is not a how-to guide that I think anybody else needs to feel pressure to follow, because I think this just came out of like prayer and assessment of where my heart has been and of what my patterns are. So I'll just say, my wife is not a fan of video games. She doesn't hate them, but like, she definitely dislikes them at least. Like whatever below hate is, she's tolerant, but she doesn't like them. I like video games. I still do. I don't think they're horrible. I have a lot of fun playing with my friends. I know I'm 32. I'm a dad. Maybe I shouldn't be playing video games. Anyway, what I found was...
No, I don't think that at all. Your generation grew up on them. It's like what my generation did with sitcoms and TV shows. I mean, still that's still out there and available. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with. Now, some video games maybe.
Sure.
But
so anyway, so I'll keep fast going. Forward. Yeah. So I just said kind of felt convicted from like the way that I would numb myself. So one of the things I did was got rid of all social media, which wasn't a huge thing for me. I've kind of been phasing out for years and then I'll like hop back in for a little bit, then I'm back in. But one thing I just did actually yesterday was for a few months, I'd sort of been feeling like I should sell my PlayStation. Like, and because, again, I don't think it's bad to have it, but it was one of those things that it was like just a really easy way for me to, anytime there's pressure, without really thinking about it, just cope for a little bit. I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm not even really coping.
So you removed a trigger.
I removed an outlet to numb myself.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I removed one source of, it's really not for me about time wasting.
And it wouldn't necessarily, if someone's listening to this, wouldn't have to necessarily sell it. You could just put it in a closet for a while if you
sure
didn't want to, and if, as long as you didn't have the magnetism to pull it out and break your own commitment. But yeah, okay,
that's kind of, so I am sort of trying to step into this. I feel like I tend to be somebody that if I'm not careful, I can just avoid, like I'm a very even-keeled person. I don't have a whole lot of high highs or low lows, but part of why I do that is I think I avoid pressure. Not that I run from it in a work context, but when I have to come home, rather than processing it, I tend to just
I love escape. The word that you use there. I think that fits this content addiction discussion. You numb yourself out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a...
Or you dull yourself, whatever you want to say.
Dull yourself out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So it's like a painkiller. So, you know, instead of having to feel the pain of pressure, I just take a couple of PlayStation Advils, you know, and it like takes away the pressure headache for a little bit. Like, but that would just be...
But it doesn't deal with it or remove it.
Oh, it definitely doesn't deal with it.
And it doesn't replenish.
No, it in fact, for me, I would often feel more drained and it would build and build and build until I would be just like exasperated and frustrated. And when's the season going to come to an end? Uh-huh. Oh my goodness. And I realized it wasn't just because of the situation I would be in. It was because of the way that I was handling it and coping with it. So
what's the replacement activity? Because it's one thing to get rid of the numbing effect from a habit, but then you have to replace it with something.
Okay.
So that it becomes healthy.
Yeah. I think one of the things that you have to, I don't know if this is exactly answering your question, but I'm just talking through my process.
Okay. Glad we can have this counseling session right here.
Yeah.
For everyone to hear.
Yeah. one of the things I've had to do is it's not necessarily replacement, but it's just to realize like it's healthy to have to actually sit in whatever I'm dealing with and not avoid life.
Mm.
Like sometimes me feeling discomfort emotionally or mentally or whatever about the stuff that I'm going through, it's not going to kill me to feel bad for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it's driven me to have to pray more.
Yeah.
Because one of my only healthy outlets that I have now, if I'm not going to use media escapism, is I'm like, well, I'm either talking to somebody or I'm going to pray about this. And talking to somebody only helps so much. And some people don't get it. And you're talking and it's like, I think it's another way to cope is just to ask everybody else, you know, to listen to me process. I'm a verbal processor. But I think one of the things it's done is it's driven me to have to have more time praying and releasing and declaring the promises of God over my life.
That sounds really, really spiritual though. Sure. So let's maybe break it down a little bit from that. So for me, so I don't have the same, trigger things that you would have, because I never played video games. I played Mario Kart with you guys growing up. It was
my get dizzy.
My go-to game.
But yeah, spinning too much.
The new graphics on the Mario Kart. I have to play the really old Mario 64 or whatever, Nintendo 64. So I don't ever really play video games, computer games, or anything like that. I grew up watching TV like crazy in a mind-numbing way. But that's probably not as big of an issue for me now. Maybe my phone is the thing I need to be convicted about and think about. But for me, getting some coaching / counseling, one of the things that my coach said to me was, you need some identified soul replenishing activities that you built into your life. And I determined there are two things that I really love. One is being outside and taking a long walk. I know it's boring, but when I get that way, Dave, that you're describing, and I need to pray and process some things, for me, I don't go sit in a room somewhere and pray. Although sometimes I guess I do. I take Emmy out for an hour walk.
Yeah.
And I don't listen.
That's often what I do too.
And I don't listen to anything. Yeah. I just walk around and I let my mind and heart sort of slowly think through and process through things. It's not like I'm intensely, oh God, please heal me kind of a thing.
Right.
It's more just creating the space and the solitude to be able to do it. The second thing was I like driving around in my Jeep, especially in warm weather with the rooftop off. Mm-hmm. So those two things for me become replenishing activities. I think there is a good thing to have something, right? To a way to get away and have those soul replenishing activities.
Yeah. You know, so you mentioned hurry sickness as a part of the title earlier, which I think kind of has a lot to do with what drives us towards
behaviors. So there's a great book that you and Josh turned me on to, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by
John Mark Comer.
And at Allison Park Church, as we go into the brand new year, we're going to actually do a weekend series. We're going to call it Ancient Habits, Current Stress. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go through the four ancient habits that he describes in his book that are the solution, I think, to content addiction and hurry sickness. So let's describe hurry sickness. Hurry sickness, according to John Ortberg, I think he quoted this in his book, The Life You Always Wanted, is the constant pressure to do more and more things in less and less time, often in the face of opposition, real or imagined. And I think he said with the consequence of feeling validated in your life or something like that. So we're all living in a hurry, and here's six symptoms he gives for hurry sickness. You're constantly speeding up daily activities.
Is this John Mark Comer?
This is John Ortberg.
Okay.
You're multitasking. Your life is cluttered. you feel like you're living on the surface. There is a sense of superficiality. Because of that, you have a growing inability to love and process things with people. And then you have something he calls sunset fatigue, which is when we're just too tired, too drained, or too preoccupied to love the people to whom we have made the deepest promises. Hurry prevents us from receiving love from the Father in heaven or giving it to his children. And so he has this statement, you have to ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life.
Yeah. I'm actually on the chapter where he talks about some of the symptoms of hurry sickness as well.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Some of these were convicting for me. I was like, oh boy. He was saying, okay, so moving from one checkout line to another because it looks shorter, faster, counting the cars in front of you and either getting in that lane that's the least or is going the fastest, multitasking to the point of where you forget other tasks. Basically, he's saying getting mad or irritated over all these things that slow us down, even just for a millisecond. Mm-hmm. So here are 10 symptoms that John Mark has of hurry sickness. Irritability is where you get mad, frustrated, or annoyed way too easily. He says hypersensitivity. All takes is a minor comment to hurt your feelings. So grumpy email to set you off or a little turn of events to throw you into emotional funk, ruin your day. Restlessness. When you try to slow down, you actually can't relax. Workaholism or just nonstop activity. You don't know how to stop. Emotional numbness, out of order priorities, lack of care for your body, escapist behaviors, slippage of spiritual disciplines, and then isolation.
Sheesh.
So it's like, oh no. When I first read this, the first chapter in Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, I sort of had my eyes popping out of my head because I don't know that every single one of those described me perfectly, but probably 80%, you know what I mean? Were something that I would struggle with pretty often.
So there's this article, I'm pulling up here now. It's from a site called masterclass.com, and they say, what are the causes of hurry sickness? Fundamentally, it is repetitive thoughts of being behind, not accomplishing enough, which increase stress and anxiety and cause hurry sickness. Constantly checking digital devices and comparing accomplishments to others on social media are modern day behaviors that help lay the groundwork for this thought and behavior pattern.
Right.
So John Mark Comer talks about these four ancient habits that are built into the Christian way of living that oftentimes we neglect. Yep. One is having a weekly Sabbath. Mm-hmm. Second is the principle of slowing, mm-hmm. purposefully slowing your life down rather than speeding it up. And number three is
simplicity,
which is a little bit like slowing. But it's just, decluttering, living a life that has less on purpose.
Yeah.
Not always running after more, more, more about everything and trying to simplify so that you don't end up spending energy in ways that are sideways.
I think the thing with simplicity, too, that was convicting for me, let's say, is the need to have to buy stuff. Like he was talking a lot about just, our consumerist economy, right. We don't have the latest model.
Nicer car, bigger vacation.
New shoes, new phone, but just there's a drive, a desire that we're falling behind. And mm-hmm. so simplicity is intentionally having less and slowing down our consumer, activities, basically. So,
then the final one is solitude.
Silence and solitude.
Silence and solitude, which is, for an introvert like me, I love that one. In fact, being introverted gets me naturally moving towards breaking this content addiction problem simply because I love to withdraw and evaluate where my soul is and process that until I feel better.
I'm not so sure, though, that that's actually a benefit for most introverts.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if you're thinking about content addiction, what are most introverts doing when they're by themselves?
That's true.
It's not that they're not reading or cooking, but often it's content. Some form.
Okay.
Because you'd rather do that with the people.
It's taking your introvertedness and aiming it in the right direction then, I guess, which is towards silence and solitude rather than mind-numbing activities.
So silence and solitude is one of those practices that I never have done, ever. I just not a part of my life.
I'm great at that.
Oh, man.
In fact, as growing up, Well, with you guys growing up with five kids, I was always in pursuit of silence.
You were. Yeah.
I never felt like I had enough.
Uncle Mike, your younger brother, was just laughing the other day because he was like, do you remember how you guys used to tell us, like, whenever you'd take a long drive, like, we'd say, how was the car ride? And he'd say, yeah, it was fine. Like, what'd you talk about? Nothing. Dad told us we had no talking. And he thought it was so funny, like, no talking? Because you would be like, nobody can say a peep. No bags crinkling, no moving, no adjusting your seatbelts.
It's my only way of surviving. So You're not supposed to tell my secrets on this podcast.
People love the secrets. That we'd have sometimes hours of silent solitude, even right beside somebody else in the car.
Let's see who can win the silent game. It was enforced silence.
Good times. Yeah, I don't miss that, though. But besides that, like, it's not really a... There's no normal part of my life where I just am totally away from any noise and don't have my phone on me.
Yeah.
And am not... Because the thing about silence is you're not even talking.
Yeah.
You're not listening to background music. There's no lo-fi. It's just like nothing.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people don't know what to do with that. In fact, as soon as people get home, they turn on something.
Yeah.
They turn on music. They turn on television. They turn on something so it's in the background. Because silence is a bit scary for people. Then you start to think, and then you start to feel, and then you feel bored, and then you feel distraught, and then you feel so. But actually, you're designed to feel all of those things because you got to process them. Because the lie is, if I turn on some noise or numb my mind out, that all of this is going to go away, and it doesn't go away; it just compounds.
Yeah.
So whatever is going on inside you, if you don't slow down enough and get enough quiet to process it appropriately. And it just builds up on you. It starts to back up, and next thing you know, it's starting to come out of your life in other ways. And so this is a big part of the mental health. And just going for an hour counseling session doesn't resolve that bad health rhythm pattern that you have. You got to get yourself into a pattern where you can, you know, recover and replenish. So
you're talking about the four disciplines.
Our goal is to start the new year intensely reviewing these four things: Sabbath, simplicity, solitude, and slowing. And we're gonna use an entire month to start the new year, which is also a time when we do some fasting and praying. And I'll just tell you, even in this conversation, Dave, I think at least a week of my season in January needs to be, because I always set aside food, and we did a recent podcast on why I hate fasting or why fasting's necessary, right? I actually think for at least a week I need to unplug my phone.
Yeah.
Just
me
to
too,
see
probably.
Just to see the effect it has on my life.
Mm-hmm. Like because, delete all apps except for your calls or something.
Yeah, because yeah. I may be more addicted to my phone than I realize. To that device, or at least dependent upon. Maybe addicted too strong. Maybe a little bit dependent upon it, and need to figure out how to break that.
Yeah.
Because I do think there's an ultimate goal here, which is to live not in dread, but in joy.
Yes.
To live not where you're constantly running away from the last set of problems you had or the pressure that you feel, but to live knowing I'm where I'm supposed to be, doing what I'm supposed to be doing with the people I'm supposed to be doing with in a God-pleasing way. I'm filled with the Holy Spirit. I know what I'm supposed to, what I'm called to, and I'm just doing my best. And every moment of every day, I'm just drinking in the pleasure of being alive and being able to be where I am with the people I'm with. Like, there is a way to enjoy your life that is where we want to get to.
Yeah. Can I throw out something? We talked about this before, but this is just helpful to frame it. Cause I want to make sure that the importance of this is coming across. You know, there's a theory among, like, in addiction research for addicts of any kind, but let's just say, you know, drug addicts or alcoholics is probably a little bit easier to illustrate the point that, like, the minute an alcoholic begins to start coping with alcohol is the minute they stop emotionally maturing. So if somebody started doing
stunts your growth right there.
So if you started coping at 12, then even if you're 45, in some ways you have the emotional maturity in terms of coping that a 12-year-old would have, because you didn't have to develop the skills that people have to have to process and cope with difficulties in life without this. So, like, I know we're not talking about specifically like substances, but I think my personal theory is that a huge, it's not the entire reason why there's a mental health epidemic, but I would say like maybe a massive contributing factor is the fact that we are all coping with content.
We're all 12 years old in our mindsets.
Yeah, or earlier. I mean, how early do kids nowadays start having an iPad? Like two?
Wow.
You know?
Oh, my goodness.
Often.
You know, when you said that, Dave, it also reminds me of the fact that a big part of getting victory or sobriety in your life as a person who is dealing with some kind of substance addiction is to go through 12 steps. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have gotten freed from needing to do a ruthless inventory of their lives and then to go and make amends for things that you've, this is all what you would call maturing. So sometimes I think the AA process is these 12 steps are really helping us learn what maturity looks like in dealing with your problems and your failings. And so it's going through the what makes you healthy as a person, not just how do I stay free from this substance.
No doubt.
Maybe everybody could benefit from a 12-step journey.
Yeah, no doubt.
To get free from content.
Well, and anybody that has already been through a 12-step journey, the advantage that they have is they're aware of what addiction feels like, and so it's easier to recognize in other forms of your life. But yeah, so I guess like in closing—
So is it possible, Dave, when we're recommending that— So maybe you can reflect on this. When you start to pull back from it all, do you feel a sense of withdrawal like you would with some kind of substance?
Totally.
Okay.
I think the thing that you feel first and foremost is bored and frustrated. Like what do I do with my time now? I'm just sitting here, like bored and frustrated. And then often, like for me anyway, then comes a lot of the anxiety of things that I've been avoiding. I'm like, because like this is part of why subconsciously I've probably been doing all this stuff is to not feel what's coming now that follows boredom and frustration, which is pressure.
What happens when you deal with the anxiety and the pressure? Do you ever get on the other side of that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I feel like for me, looking back now, I feel like there are periods of my life where I felt like I was sleepwalking. I didn't know I was sleepwalking.
Oof.
You know, I didn't have any idea that anything was not normal. I felt like this is just the normal way to process things. It's like I'm still dealing with it. I'm not avoiding my life. I'm still working a job. I still have like, you know, like nothing in my life was blowing up, but I was definitely sort of there was a part of me that was just vacant and I would only deal with it when it would blow up.
See, you know? This is one of the things about a dependency or an addiction is that nobody, Dave, would have looked at you and said, oh, he's content addicted.
No.
You know what I mean? No one would say, oh, he's got a problem with his phone. Like, don't, you know, sort of whispering, oh, here he comes. That's the phone dependent dude. Like, I think the reality of it is it's just so common.
It's so common.
That almost you become unusual if you aren't dependent in some way on some of this stuff.
And frankly, like—
By the way, let me just say, for people who are my age and older— Many of that generation is not dependent on their phone or on a video game, but they are addicted to the news cycle.
Oh, definitely.
And they perpetually watch whatever their favorite news programming is. And here's what's coming next. Here's what's coming next. In our next segment, we're going to talk about this world problem is the same kind of dopamine hit that other things have. And I have walked into rooms of family members over the last number of years and said, you need to turn that off because I can tell it's making you nervous. Mm-hmm. And I actually think for people that are not in the video game generation, the 24-hour news channel is your version of content addiction.
There's a really good book I read on that by a guy named Matt Taibbi. His book was called Hate Inc., I think. And it was all about the creation of the modern news cycle to actually do what you're talking about. It stimulates dopamine hits. It actually, because it also triggers like adrenaline.
Yeah.
Because the way that news is framed intentionally, it's to be sold and to be marketed. And the more fear you generate, the more people are actually like dependent on hearing what's happening, what the possible solutions are.
Because they're like, so I actually mentioned this in my message this past weekend at the Hampton campus. And I had a gentleman that I met for the first time after service. And he came up to me and he said, you described my life. He said, I watch constantly. And I often think to myself, you raising like a red alarm fire, like this is one of the worst things ever and it's going to destroy the whole world. And I think to myself, what am I supposed to do about that? And I'm like, yeah, isn't that, it's so, it makes you feel so powerless, but they do keep you watching because they, you know, it's almost like life and death depends on this next news thing that you're going to hear.
Yeah.
And it just keeps you engaged in something that is destructive to your soul. So maybe for you, when we go into the month of January, it's not removing your phone from your life. It's to turn off whatever the news station is that's your news of choice, and to purpose to go a week finding other sources for what.
Let me throw another quick other book out there, because I don't know who, like, if anybody takes my recommendations, but I always have things.
Thinking with everything you got going on, and you got a new baby. When did you find time to read all
these are the last couple of years. I listen to a lot of audiobooks. My goodness,
okay.
Yeah.
While you're playing your PlayStation, you're listening to...
No, this is probably while I'm washing the dishes or doing laundry. Okay.
Yeah.
It's still probably a form of addiction. Like, I can't have silence while, you know, doing whatever I'm doing.
Well, we're benefiting from that because you're reading all this material.
So Hate Inc. was about, like, the...
Hate Inc.,
like, Incorporated by Matt Taibbi. That's about, like... how the news cycles have act. So he leans liberal, but he was formerly like a journalist, primarily writing for like Democratic outlets, but like he kind of just comes at both sides of the political aisle to say that major news media is actually selling and making tons of money off of our fear and creating intentional actually hatred and animosity towards the other parties just because it actually sparks business. So that was one thing that it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Like when he goes through all these examples.
We all know that, but he probably has the research to back it up, right?
Yeah, and it makes you go, oh, like maybe not everybody that I thought was a dirtbag really is a dirtbag. You know what I mean? Like maybe there's a bunch of people that are making lots of money off of false things to get us mad.
Oh, no doubt.
So that was one thing. The other flip side of this is called Factfulness by a guy named Hans Rosling. And he talks about in his book how often like facts and statistics are used in an exaggerative manner where they don't present what's actually happening, because if you don't present it as extreme, people don't feel like so what he says is basically.
No, I just sat through a whole session on someone doing exactly that. It wasn't that what was being said was untrue. It was true.
Yeah.
It just was so slanted.
Yes.
It never presented the counter argument to say, now this is true, but this is also true.
And here's what is, so Factfulness is all about this. He says, two things can be true. Something can still be a major problem and it can be getting much better than it was before.
Right.
And both can be true.
At the same time, yes.
But what he's saying is often happening is every problem is being pitched as if it's worsening, even though most major world problems are much better today than they were before.
Yeah.
Like most things actually aren't getting worse. They're mostly getting better, but it feels like everything is blowing up and it's in flames. And so he has statistics that go through this of what we need to understand about our world.
That could be a whole episode right there, just that particular topic.
Yeah, it was a fascinating read.
Because isn't that hopeful? Things are actually getting better. They're not getting worse in most cases. Now, there's some situations that are worse, no doubt.
Yeah.
But okay, how do we tie this one up?
So as we close, I feel like I'm randomly flipping where I have the information guy for this episode. You're interviewing me, which is weird. But yeah, I guess as we close, like my thoughts would be, it is worth this year examining whether you're living your life in a little bit of a sleepwalk stupor. Mm-hmm. Because if you are, it doesn't, like you might be going through some really difficult things. It's just best to face them head on and to live life feeling alive and to not cope with addictive or dependent types of ways to process things.
Yes.
I understand pressure sucks and it's hard and feeling, you know, pain and man, uncertainty and not being sure of how things are going to turn out. All that's difficult, but like we naturally were created as people, like God created us as people that can process things where it doesn't have to become a mental health epidemic for us. And I think that one of the worst things to do is just to numb ourselves out. So it's just worth taking some time to like assess and to slow down a little bit and to try to get healthy mentally and emotionally.
Actually, there's a little scripture I'll insert here at the end. I know we're at the end. I'm not going to do long, but I think it's Luke chapter 10 or 11. Jesus is at Martha and Mary's house. And he says to Martha, 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 you are worried and distracted about so many things. Hmm. And I think that is what Jesus might say to us today. You know, your word and distract about so many things. But only one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen to power down right now. And here she is sitting in my presence and enjoying this moment. I wish you would do that, Martha, right? So maybe Jesus would look at you and say, what is it? I think it's Matthew chapter 10. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon me and learn from me, because I'm humble in heart. I'm dependent on my Father, right? And you'll gain rest for your soul. Jesus does have rest for your soul. There is a pathway forward for you. God's presence is more than enough. His grace is sufficient. But if you don't access all that, you won't benefit from it. Mm-hmm. And if you're busy numbing yourself out, you'll never receive the grace for the things that you feel on the inside. And God wants to release that into your life today.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. Great. Well, hopefully this is beneficial to you. And again, we just want to say, as we always do, thank you for being a part of the show. Thanks for listening faithfully. If you could help us out in any way in this, you know, season of giving, you could give back to us, you know, not monetarily, but just in terms of helping to share this. You know, you can like and subscribe on YouTube, hit the notification bell if you want to do that. If you're listening on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, you can subscribe. And also, you know, we talked about this, but if you can leave us a review, especially a 5-star review, it actually helps us to be a little bit more visible and more known so people can find us easier. And as always, you can also share this with a friend, but any of that would really help us out. So we appreciate you being with us this year, almost into the next year, 2024. So yeah, thanks for being with us. I guess we'll catch you guys next time.